Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, February 3rd, 2024. From the front page of the paper, Old State Flag May Keep Flying. Public voting on designs, but lawmakers have final say. By Addison Wright, Chicago Tribune. Scott Grandchamp was cleaning out the back room last month at the LaGrange Park Ace Hardware store when he found an untouched Illinois state flag tucked into a safe. He decided to replace a company anniversary flag that he designed with the state flag and has flown it under the American flag every day since. It's nice, and I think it's something that should be flown, and it does represent our state, Grandchamp said. I think everybody's always just raised the American flag, and they don't raise the state flag. Since I found it and had an extra set of hooks, I said, let's raise it. Maligned by some, the state flag design that's been used for more than 50 years has its fans. But its future is uncertain, as the Illinois Flag Commission is a few weeks away from choosing a winner in a contest to design a new flag to represent the land of Lincoln, though the outcome will be advisory at best. Illinois residents have until February 14th to vote. Every resident can cast one ballot every 24 hours. On 10 finalists the commission chose from almost 5,000 submissions. The ultimate decision will be made by state lawmakers, who are scheduled to receive the vote totals on the 10 submissions by April 1st, as part of a full report from the commission. Legislators will then consider whether to stick with the current flag or go with one from the design contest. They could also choose to shift to the state centennial flag or sesquicentennial flag, according to State Senator Doris Turner, a Springfield Democrat who sponsored the bill leading to the design contest. Illinois State Senator Terry Bryant, a member of the commission, made it clear she likes the current flag, which she says she flies outside her house. Several neighbors on her street do the same, she said. There are things about our flag that stand out, said Bryant, a Republican from downstate Murfreesboro. For instance, when the flag moves, and when it flies in the air, it actually looks like the water moves. Same thing with the sun. The state flag is essentially a white background with just the state seal, a bald eagle with the state motto in its mouth, standing on a rock, bearing the year of the state's incorporation, 1818, and the seal's creation, 1868. Ted Key, a vexillologist or person who studies flags, calls it a seal on a bedsheet, an unflattering term in flag design in vexillology circles, and said Illinois needs a rebrand. He noted the flag's details can't be distinguished at a distance, and that the white background can't be used on graphic designs because the white bleeds into the background. He also said he doesn't think state seals belong on flags because seals represent the government, while a flag is meant to represent the people of the state. As a civilian, I would ask myself, why would I want to fly the flag of the government of my state at my house? Kay said. Changing the flag would involve costs. Utah, which adopted a new flag last March, spent almost $500,000 on its flag task force and $5,000 on prize money for design finalists. A report compiled by the Utah Fiscal Analyst Office said it might cost local governments $20 per flag to replace old flags, and the governor included $50,000 in his state budget for marketing the new flag. Minnesota also changed its flag last year. The Minnesota legislature allocated $35,000 to fund the design phase. But the biggest cost burden falls on state agencies and municipal governments, including police and fire departments. For instance, a county commissioner told a local news outlet that it would cost $50,000 to replace the state seal on a justice center. The state's Department of Corrections is updating uniform patches gradually, with an estimated cost over time of $2 million, a spokesperson said. Bryant said she was not clear on what the costs of changing the flag might be, and plans to request an estimate during the spring legislative session. But Turner said she is confident the costs won't be high. She noted the commission is made up of volunteers, and said the state would follow Utah in replacing flags gradually as they wear out. We haven't delved that far down into it and put numbers together, but we will probably follow what Utah and several other states that have gone through this process have done, Turner said. They phased in changing the flag, so it's not like you wake up one day and every flag is gone. Regardless of the outcome, Turner said the flag competition serves a productive purpose. This is an opportunity for some civic engagement, state pride, and representation, as this is as close to the community that we can possibly get, she said. Proponents of leaving the flag alone, among them Anne Bartok, a resident of Bryant's downstate district, have taken their case to social media. After hearing of the possible flag change, Bartok rallied dozens of local residents on Facebook in order to vote in favor of the current flag. Primarily as a taxpayer in the state of Illinois, I don't feel that this is an expenditure that our government should consider, Bartok said. I'm concerned that our state is not necessarily physically sound, and this seems to be a frivolous endeavor. If there was some reason that a new flag was going to improve business relationships with other states or attract more people to live in Illinois, I might understand. But I don't even think that's the case, Bartok said. There's not been enough evidence to persuade me that getting a new flag is going to solve any of the state's problems. John Kokoris, who bills himself as Mr. Illinois and speaks about state history and other subjects at libraries, said he's been surprised by the number of people saying they like the current flag. I hear a lot of people say, oh, I just like the flag, I like the eagle. There are just patriotic people out there who like that sort of thing, Kokoris said. I would have loved to see it updated, but a lot of great things have been done and accomplished under the current flag. Kay, the vexologist, said the state's process for involving residents in the flag decision is flawed, because voting includes the current flag. That means the flag that flies now could come out on top with less than 50% of the votes, while residents who want a different flag will be divided across the 10 submitted designs. This conflating of democratic participation in choosing the flag and lack of expertise in creating a great design for them to choose from is a challenge, Kay said of the Illinois process. But Turner said it was important to include the current flag in the voting, to give individuals who felt strongly that opinion. Kokoris and Bryant also take issue with the selection process of the 10 finalists. Everyone seems confused, and I feel like if we had better finalists, if people could have seen some of those more unique ideas, that might have opened their eyes to what could be, Kokoris said. Instead, we're looking at stars and stripes and red, white, and blue and former President Abraham Lincoln's head. And I love Lincoln, but don't get me wrong. It's just like there are so many more ways to talk about Illinois. Turner said the 10 finalists were selected over a 4-hour meeting in which each commission member presented their 10 favorite flag designs, and the members chose from that pool. No matter the outcome, Turner said this process has increased civic engagement around the flag. Out of the 4,844 entries received over the 6-week time period, Turner said several hundred submissions came from elementary, middle, and high school students. The commissions should be able to say, "We like the stars from this one and the colors from that one. Let's combine them," said Kay. The goal is to design a flag, not to select a design. Tim Butler, a former Republican state representative and member of the Flag Commission, said whatever the outcome of the competition and legislative deliberation, the process has been a healthy one for a flag that didn't get much attention. Hopefully, if nothing else, this raises the visibility of our flag, said Butler of Springfield, and people take a little more pride in it. Turning to page 2 of the February 3rd edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, Bar Argument Ends in Robbery. Tony Reed, Decatur, shooting the breeze with a bartender about the lamentable state of the world, ended up with a Decatur man grabbed by the throat and robbed of a gold and diamond necklace, police report. Sergeant Jaime Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department said several other patrons present took exception to the conversation, and it was one of them that attacked and robbed the 47-year-old victim. Hagemeyer said the battery and robbery happened around 11:34 p.m. Saturday at a business in the 1100 block of West Main Street. The victim, talking to the bartender about today's society and how it's just not the same as it was in the day, she added. Multiple other people got involved, and this one person, described as larger in build and chunky, interjected himself into the conversation and was arguing with the victim. Then he began choking him and ripped his jewelry off. The assailant had fled before police arrived and was being sought on robbery and other charges. Man beaten over activity. Tony Reed, Decatur. Police said a Decatur man engaged in what was described as unspecified recreational activities outside an abandoned car was dragged out by three men and beaten. Sergeant Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department said the attack occurred Thursday night, and the 38-year-old victim suffered a laceration to his head and swelling to one side of his face. She said the man had been inside the vehicle on a lot in the 600 block of East Wood Street when he was noticed by his assailants. Hagemeyer would not say on the record what the victim was doing, but the three men watching took exception to it. They ran up to the car and told him to get the expletive out of his vehicle, Hagemeyer said. Then they pulled him out and just started battering him. The victim later refused hospital treatment, but Hagemeyer said the assailants were being sought on a charge of aggravated battery involving great bodily harm. Hagemeyer said that the charge was triggered because the laceration to the victim's head is likely to leave a scar. Woman accused of nearly hitting X, Tony Reed, Decatur. A Decatur woman pursuing her ex-boyfriend and his current girlfriend in a car chase is accused of trying to run him over when he got out to confront her, police report. The incident happened at the intersection of East Pershing Road and North Woodford Street on Wednesday night, but was not reported until Friday, according to Sergeant Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department. Police located the 32-year-old former girlfriend the same day, and she was booked into the Macon County Jail at 4:20 p.m. on a preliminary charge of aggravated assault. Hagemeyer said the 36-year-old ex-boyfriend escaped injury as his assailant zipped past in her car after he had pulled over and got out of his vehicle. It looks like the suspect had been chasing her ex-boyfriend just to get him to stop, Hagemeyer added, and when he finally did pull over, she took off and almost hit him while taking off. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. Punxsutawney Phil sees shadow. Rodent folklore predicts 6 more weeks of winter. By Mark Scolfaro, Associated Press. Punxsutawney, Philadelphia. Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow Sunday and predicted 6 more weeks of wintry weather, his top-headed handlers announced, to a raucous, record-sized crowd at Gobbler's Knob in Pennsylvania. Phil was welcomed with chants of Phil, 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 and pulled from a hatch on his tree stump shortly after sunrise, before a member of the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club read from a scroll in which he boasted, "Only I know. You can't trust AI." The woodchuck's weather forecast is an annual ritual that goes back more than a century in western Pennsylvania, with far older roots in European folklore. But it took Bill Murray's 1993 Groundhog Day movie to transform the event into what it is today, with tens of thousands of revelers at the scene, and imitators scattered around the U.S. and beyond. When Phil is deemed to have not seen his shadow, that is said to usher in an early spring. When he does see it, there will be 6 more weeks of winter. The crowd was treated to a fireworks show, confetti, and live music that ranged from the Ramones to Pennsylvania polka as they awaited sunrise and Phil's emergence. Governor Josh Shapiro, local and state and elected officials, and a pair of pageant winners were among the dignitaries at the site. Self-employed New York gingerbread artist John Lovitch has attended the event for 33 years. "I like the cold, and this is probably the best and biggest midwinter party in the entire world," Lovitch said in Punxsutawney, "and it's just a really good time." Phil has predicted a longer winter far more often than an early spring, and one effort to track his accuracy concluded he was right less than half of the time. What 6 more weeks of winter means is subjective. Tom Dunkel, president of the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club, said there are two types of people who make the trek: the faithful, seeking to validate their beliefs, and the doubters, who want to confirm their skepticism. Phil communicated his forecast to Dunkel through Groundhog Ease with the help of a special cane that Dunkel has inherited as the group's leader. It's not as if he speaks in English words. "He'll like wink, he'll purr, he'll chatter, he'll, you know, nod," Dunkel said. Attendance is free, but it costs 5 miles to take a bus and avoid a 1-mile trek from the middle of town to the stage where the prediction was made, some 80 miles northeast of Pittsburgh. The need for so many buses is why the local schools where the sport's mascot is the Chucks close when Groundhog Day falls on a weekday. Keith Post, his wife, and a friend have watched the Groundhog Day movie in each of the past 5 years and decided this was the time to make the trip from Ohio to witness the event. "We booked rooms almost a year in advance, and we're here," Post said. "We're doing it." A new welcome center opened 4 years ago, and the club is working on an elaborate second living space for Phil and family so they can split time between Gobbler's Knob and Phil's longtime home at the town library. The club also put up large video screens and more powerful speakers this year to help attendees in the back of the crowd follow the proceedings. "It's a holiday where you don't really owe anyone anything," said A.J. DeRoom, who, among the club's 15-member inner circle, served as Phil's handler and held him up to loud cheers on Sunday. "You're grasping onto the belief, you know, in something that's just fun to believe in." Jackie Handley agreed a year ago to visit Punxsutawney for the first time to help a friend check off an item on their bucket list. They were ready for the sub-freezing temperatures. "It's once in a lifetime. We're probably not going to come back, and we have tons of warm clothes," said Handley, who lives in Falls Church, Virginia. After the forecast was made, club members and Phil posed for photos with people from the crowd. Phil has a wife, Punxsutawney Phyllis, and 2 pups born this spring, Shadow and Sunny, although the family did not join him on stage for the big event. The Groundhog family eats fruits and vegetables, gets daily visits from DeRoom, and sees a veterinarian at least once a year. Turning to page 5, some national news. Refugee support funding shut off, by Tiffany Stanley, Associated Press. Tens of thousands of recently arrived refugees might lose support for basic necessities like food and rent after a Trump administration order suspended federal funding for resettlement agencies. There is widespread confusion as agency leaders seek greater clarity from the government. The most pressing question is how they will continue supporting refugees already under their care in the United States. The suspension of federal funding paralyzes the program, said Krish O'Mara, president and CEO of Global Refuge, the National Lutheran Refugee Resettlement Agency. The Federal Refugee Program, a form of legal migration to the U.S., has been in place for decades and assists those who escaped war, natural disaster, or persecution. Despite long-standing support for accepting refugees, the program has become politicized in recent years. Religious organizations shoulder the bulk of refugee resettlement work in the United States. Out of the 10 federally funded national agencies that resettle refugees, 7 are faith-based. The Trump administration halted new refugee admissions, but some refugee agency leaders say the stop work order goes a step further, and they assume it will affect refugees in the U.S. who rely on federal funds for housing, food, and support during their first 3 months in the country. This foreign assistance was stopped before the Trump administration tried to pause all federal grants and loans. Both directives are part of an ideological review of government spending. Secretary of State Marco Rubio agreed Tuesday to at least temporarily keep spending money on life-saving humanitarian aid. Resettlement agencies are trying to honor their commitments and keep paying their staffs and administrative costs, but their reserves and private donations will have difficulty matching millions in lost federal funding, if indeed it is even stopped. U.S. religious groups have been resettling refugees for more than 100 years. Today there are national agencies with Catholic, Jewish, and Protestant roots. Church World Service helps to resettle about 12% of refugees nationwide, about 12,000 in the last fiscal year, said its Senior Vice President Errol Kekich. It really is a bridge to self-sufficiency, Kekich said, of the services, for which federal funding is now, apparently, paused. He estimated that about 4,000 refugees served by his organization would be affected. This order stands to affect at least 26,494 refugees and recipients of special immigrant visas, and almost certainly more, according to an analysis of government statistics. The order pertains to grants that fund resettlement of newly arrived refugees within the first 3 months of their time in the United States. From page 6, a few sports notes. Chiefs, Eagles arrive. The Philadelphia Eagles and Kansas City Chiefs have landed in New Orleans for Super Bowl week. They exited their planes in sunshine and temperatures in the 60s on Sunday afternoon, a week before their matchup on February 9th. Players and staff made their ways down movable staircases from their planes to buses, awaiting them on the tarmac, without much fanfare. They then quickly rolled off in convoys bound for their downtown hotels. Most Eagles players and staff wore black sweatshirts with the Super Bowl 59 logo across the chest. Las Vegas Raiders. Chip Kelly is returning to the NFL as Las Vegas's offensive coordinator, according to a source. Kelly was the offensive coordinator on Ohio State's national championship team this season, after previously serving as the head coach at Oregon and UCLA. as well as the Philadelphia Eagles and the San Francisco 49ers. Turning to page 4, Life and Entertainment News. Entertainment Briefs. Martha Stewart, parole officer, nixed Saturday Night Live gig. Martha Stewart has revealed that she was once asked to host Saturday Night Live, but her parole officer wouldn't allow it. During appearance on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon last week, Stewart said she got the call from Lorne Michaels after her release from prison in 2005. Stewart served 5 months at the federal prison camp in Allerston, West Virginia, after being convicted of fraud in relation to the I'm Clone stock trading case. I wanted to, and they asked me as I was coming out of Alderson, that camp I was in for a while, Stewart said, of hosting the iconic sketch show, and my parole officer wouldn't give me the time to do it. I still have his name and number. Stewart noted that under parole, she was only allowed to be out of the house for 8 hours per day, which did not align with Saturday Night Live's intense schedule. When Fallon said she'd be a great host, Stewart agreed, "I would be amazing. Start a campaign." Earlier in the interview, Fallon pointed out that Stewart is one of the most impersonated people in SNL history, having been portrayed by 9 different players. Television Q&A, Bette Davis's memorable lines. I belong to a group we call If We Could Make Remarks Like Bette Davis, My Life Would Be Perfect. One of the ladies talked about when Betty said, "What a dump, but what is that movie with it? We would love to see it." Answer: that is from Beyond the Forest, of a 1949 melodrama starring Davis, Joseph Cotten, and David Bryan. The line is one of Davis's most famous, included in the American Film Institute's list of the most 100 most memorable movie quotes. Davis is also on the list for "Fasten your seat belts, it's gonna be a bumpy ride" in All About Eve, and "Don't let's ask for the moon, we have the stars" in Now Voyager. Question: I am curious as to who has appeared and not just as the main star in the most movies, Morgan Freeman or Samuel L. Jackson? Answer: although Samuel L. Jackson is about 10 years younger than Morgan Freeman, the Internet Movie Database indicates Jackson has been in more movies than his older colleague, around 180 versus roughly 125 for Freeman. That's not counting performances in TV episodes, where Freeman has appeared more often. Question: I enjoy old comedies such as Seinfeld and MASH. However, one of my favorites, Will and Grace, I can never find. Where can I find them? Answer: Disney Plus and Hulu have all of the comedies starring Deborah Messing and Eric McCormick. The original 8 seasons from 1998 to 2006, and the 3 seasons of the 2017-2020 revival. There also have been DVD releases of all 11 seasons. You might want to see if your local library has them. You can also find the show on Logo TV. Some birthdays for today include actor Morgan Fairchild, 75, actor Nathan Lane is 69, actor Thomas Calabro is 66, actor Michelle Green is 63, country singer Matraca Berg is 81, actor Maura Tierney is 60, and rapper Sean Kingston is 35. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald in Review from Monday, February 3rd, 2021. Please stay tuned.